Campus FM jipprezenta Laboratorju Letterarju. Vjaġġ fid-dinja tal-letteratura komparata.
Today's and next week's program of Laboratorio Letterario, our guest will be Dr. Ivan Kallous, who is a lecturer at the Department of English within the Faculty of Arts. Dr. Kallous obtained his PhD at the Center for Critical and Cultural Theory at Cardiff University. He is the editor, together with Dr. Stefan Herbrechter of the University of Leeds, of two collections of essays on literary theory, both published this year, Discipline and Practice, The Irresistibility of Theory, published by Bucknell University Press, and Post-Theory Culture Criticism by Rodopi. He has also published a number of articles in the areas of post-structuralism, comparative literature, and post-humanism. And it is on these aspects of his research that our two interviews will be focusing. Ivan, could you share with our listeners on Campus FM how your interest in theory of literature came about?
Well, that takes me back some years. There were a number of determining factors. The first that I should mention, perhaps, is the lectures in literary theory delivered by Professor Peter Vassallo, currently head of the Department of English, precisely in literary theory. It was he who introduced me to the work and ideas of figures like Roland Barthes and Ramon Jakobsen and Gerard Genette and Zvetan Todorov. I remember thinking at the time that it was great to be reading the work in their own lifetime of a number of literary theorists like Genette, who were contributing, so to speak, to the intellectual climate of the period in which I was an undergraduate. Jonathan Culler's Structuralist Poetics, which to this day remains an invaluable guide to structuralist literary criticism, was the first introductory work in the area that I read, and from there on I followed the footnote trail, as it were. I can't pretend I understood everything at the time, and some of it was utterly baffling, but I felt pleasantly stretched by the challenge and anxious to know more. It also became evident that my interest in the postmodern novel was best served by, I suppose, a familiarity with the modes of analysis of more contemporary criticism than I had read previously. I remember working on Vladimir Nabokov's Pale Fire at the time, which is a wonderfully inventive novel in terms of form, and it became clear to me that I should proceed to post-structuralism, which is when I decided to start reading Derrida and what he had to say about play and literary form. I remember struggling there too, but realizing that this was wonderfully exciting and deeply thought-provoking, and from that point on I knew that I wanted to study literary theory further, if only to understand more of what I was finding intriguing, even while it was baffling.
Ivan, I think the key point that you mention is precisely how you felt baffled, but at the same time, feeling baffled means also stimulating your intellectual curiosity.
Yes, and I think that literary theory does precisely that. It throws your way concepts which you intuitively feel an affinity with, and you find expressed there sometimes your own thoughts about literature, but you find them expressed there by these wonderful writers, people like Derrida and Barthes and Genette. And you feel that you must need more, you must read more, if only to learn more about how you can improve your own critical writing style.
Yes, Ivan, I'd like to move to a question which stems from your book, Discipline and Practice, The Irresistibility of Theory, which you co-edited with Stefan Herbrechter, and which came out very recently in 2004 with Bucknell University Press. Now, you focus on the paradoxical situation in which literary theory currently finds itself. On the one hand, you rightly point out that theory has now become an accepted, indeed an established discipline within the university. But on the other hand, as you also go on to say, one of theory's defining features is its capacity for radical practice. So my question is this: how can theory maintain any claim to radical practice now that it has become part of the very same establishment which it should be rebelling against?
Yes, this was actually precisely the paradox which drove Stefan and myself to edit that book. We became puzzled by the insistence with which theory has continued to push forth a claim on radical practice. In other words, its potential to be a force of change within the university and eventually, as envisaged in the best post-Althusserian thinking, so to speak, through a trickle-down effect to effect change within society as a whole. Now, naturally, there are some obvious objections to this, because it's very easy to say that that theory lives in an ivory tower. Frank Armode, for instance, the distinguished English critic, recounts how bemused he was to learn that Tolkill, a group of radical Paris intellectuals in the 60s and 70s, who were influential in theory's beginnings, would go around to discuss their ideas with Renault workers during factory breaks. Now, that having been said, there are clear and cogent reasons for thinking why theory might not be such an ivory tower pursuit after all. There is no doubt that the inroads made by feminist thought, by post-colonialist thinking, by post-Marxist critique, to name just three discourses within theory, if we were to conceive theory very broadly, have permeated through to a broader public. And I'd like to give one example here. It is quite extraordinary how well known it has become that Edward Said suggests, or perhaps appears to suggest, we should say, in Culture and Imperialism, that Jane Austen's Mansfield Park is built on a strategic silencing of the realities of the slave trade in Antigua. In other words, that the incidental, blink-and-you-miss-it reference in the novel to the fact that the prosperity of the English family at the center of that narrative depends on plantations where conditions are poor, but which distantly determine privilege in Britain, well, all of that actually centers on Antigua, which is, by and large, silenced in the novel. Now, I say that Edward Said appears to suggest that because Said's words are often, of course, quoted out of context and the subtleties of his argument lost. And that became clear to me as well when reading Lolita in Tehran, her recent bestseller, where that idea is reported back by a character who, one might say, willfully misread Said's words. But to get back to your question, what indeed provided the raison d'etre for our anthology and the continued claims for theory's supposed radicalism at a time of post-theory is that a number of literary theorists, decade after the various theory wars, as they were called, well, they are all still talking about theory as if it might be a Cinderella among the discourses of the humanities. We felt we couldn't quite buy this. We were curious to see if theory could be said to have lost its radicalism as a direct result of what we think is the opposite fate of having become established within the university curriculum. Is it still fresh? Can it still excite the vexed debates it once did? The polemical climate which always surrounded theory has receded somewhat in recent years, and we felt that this might suggest a weakening of its capacity for radicalism and provocation. We invited a number of leading academics working within theory to discuss that issue, and we were fortunate to get responses from figures like Catherine Belsey, Laurence Venuti, Jean-Jacques Le Cercle, and others who spearheaded theory's establishment in universities in France, the UK, and the USA. The outlooks varied, but it emerged that most of the contributors divided themselves quite sharply between loyalties to heretical politics, on the one hand, as exemplified by the work of Donald Morton and Masoud Zavarzadeh, and on the other hand, loyalties to radical modes of reading, which were careful about keeping literature uppermost. My own feeling is that, at this point in time, the greatest radicalism in theory is to insist on the fact that literature might be its most intriguing object, especially at a time when cultural theory and media theory threaten to displace that.
I'm very intrigued by your image, the Cinderella image, which definitely needs to be dismantled, precisely by focusing, and this would be really going back to feminism, Marxism, and colonialism, the nexus between theory and practice. I think that even taking up Fred Jameson's slogan with which he ends the political unconscious, always historicize. Yes, we need to historicize, but at the same time, I believe we need to go beyond merely historicizing, and we need to insist on this nexus between theory and practice. And you also rightly point out Said's fascinating work on Mansfield Park. Said focuses on the gaps, the omissions, the silences, and it is up to the reader to fill in those gaps actively and not merely passively. So all of this is very, very fascinating, Ivan. And your book definitely brings out this two-fronted position in a marvelous fashion, this two-fronted position which theory now finds itself in, and this predicament as well of theory, and the particular moment in which theory finds itself in.
Yes, I think I would just add to that one thing. If there is any Cinderella within theory now, because I don't think theory itself is any more in a Cinderella position within the humanities, well, I would say it is actually, bizarrely perhaps, the study of literature itself. Theory has now extended itself to a number of practices within culture, within society, within politics. And what has receded somewhat from the purview of theory is literary texts themselves. And it does seem to me that we might perhaps think and remember with profit Paul de Man's view that the best literary criticism is ultimately language about language, and language about the most wonderful and aesthetic language which has sometimes been contained within the covers of books which together make up what we call literature. I think it might not be too bad a thing if we returned to that and remembered more of that, more often in theory.
And if I'm not mistaken, correct me please if I am, I think all of this also has to do with your title, The Irresistibility of Theory, the IR, which is within parentheses, this situation, this position of theory, which resists, but at the same time is itself irresistible.
Yes, I'm glad you picked up on that, because that was, of course, a pun we wanted to bring out. Theory has always been resisted within the academy, outside the academy. There is a lot of resistance to its founding principles. There is a lot of resistance also to its practitioners, a lot of resistance to the notion that theory encourages a kind of anything goes position and stance within literary criticism and literary thought at the present time. At the same time, of course, theory appears to be irresistible because it is hard to ignore it. The thought of figures like Derrida, Lyotard, Frederick Jameson, Terry Eagleton, Edward Said, all these wonderful thinkers, well, it's very hard to say, I'm not going to read these, I don't actually want to have anything to do with this, because these are people who are, of course, commenting on our times and on the discourses produced from our times. At the same time, and this is where I'd like to bring in Paul de Man, Paul de Man argued that the strongest resistance to theory is theory's resistance to itself, and that theory is strongest precisely when it is resisting itself. Now, this might seem like so much play on words, but I think he did put his finger on an important issue, mainly that theory is a discourse which, for example, in deconstruction, is almost pathologically self-aware. And I think it is that self-awareness, it's that self-referentiality, its own vexed and almost self-crippling study of its own ideas, of its own notions, when theory is perhaps most rigorous. It is this, perhaps, that we should take from theory as theory's best lesson.
Yes, Ivan, I'd like to go back to your book, Discipline and Practice. And this time I'd like to ask you a question which stems from your concluding chapter, which you very aptly call the extroduction. Now, in your extroduction, you refer to the numerous theoretical notions which seem to beseech us. And all of these notions, interestingly enough, or rather significantly enough, contain the word post. Post-history, post-modernity, post-capitalism, post-post-structuralism, in short, post-everything. All of these notions clearly express an apocalyptic feeling of an ending, or what you define as the experience of the palpability of terminality. What does this mean? Does this mean that theory has now ended, that theory is about to be replaced by something else, by something other than theory? Has it crippled itself, to go back to your words? You said self-crippling, something which I think you very aptly phrased. Is it time for theory to move to something different? I'd like to hear your diagnosis of this terminal condition. Or perhaps is this condition just a passing phase?
Well, talk about the ends of theory. That kind of talk has been constant and consistent ever since the beginning of theory, so I don't think one should get particularly uptight about the supposed end of theory. Derrida and Spectres of Marx himself expressed some weariness with discourses of terminality, so I suggest perhaps we should all take this with a pinch of salt and recognize that talk about the end of philosophy, the end of the humanities, the end of theory has been around for a very long time. So perhaps we could say that reports on the death of theory have themselves probably been greatly exaggerated. In any case, I do not think that post-theory can simply be regarded in terms of its passing, that is, in terms of something which comes after a theory to bury it and say, good riddance, that's theory over and done with. I think there is too much that has been valuable within theory for it to have to worry about being discarded or forgotten or silently ignored and tolerated until it goes away and dies. How could we possibly think that the debates around the Barthian and Foucauldian notion of the death of the author, for instance, or Christopher's ideas on intertextuality, or Derrida's ideas about the importance of the singularity of unique works of art, how could that ever pass silently and meekly into oblivion?
Yes, Ivan, if I might add, I would add Frederick Jameson's critique of postmodernism, which he views as being depthless, as mere pastiche, devoid of any parodic content. So Jameson, and linked obviously to what you are saying and all their notions, how could all of these notions, as you are saying, be just ignored?
Yes, and I would add one other factor, Jean-Francois Lyotard's problematic of the post. Lyotard problematizes this seemingly innocent prefix, post, to suggest in his work that a discipline or a discourse may start to acquire a currency after the energy of that movement has already been spent. So I know I'm simplifying scandalously here, because I know that perhaps this is not the proper forum to rehearse those ideas in detail. But having said all that, having said that perhaps we should not make too much of the rhetoric about the end of theory, there is no doubt that what I called the experience of the palpability of terminality about theory at the moment is there. This probably cannot be denied. And at its most banal level, this manifests itself in the deaths of a wonderful French generation of thinkers, Barthes, Foucault, Lyotard, Blanchot, and more recently, of course, Derrida among them. So a subsequent question is, what happens now? Who will theory's next great thinkers be?
And don't you feel, Ivan, that it is it's almost as if everybody were second-guessing what the next bandwagon would be and who its components would
yes,
be.
Yes, very definitely. Now, my own opinion on this is that that kind of position is probably a sterile position. So I'm more interested in a different form of post-theory, which does not exclude other forms, but which takes the road of theory's return upon itself, so to speak, a revisionist look back at roads not taken, and a reconsideration of positions within theory's own orthodoxy. For, mark my words, there is a lot of orthodoxy within theoretical discourse, mm-hmm. despite its claim to radicalism, of course.
Yes.
Now, a wonderful example of this kind of post-theory is provided, in my opinion, by the essay by Suzanne Gerhardt, In Discipline and Practice. That essay critiques Althusser's famous work on ideological state apparatuses to show how anomalous it is that Althusser did not give enough attention to the assumption of a shared national language when coming up with his ideas on the interpolation of the subject. Now, Althusser, as reread by Gerhardt, contrives to become a more complete and complex theorist, so to speak. And it is this post-theoretical charge and renewal provided by Gerhardt, mm-hmm. which lends new urgency to a classic essay within theory. And Gerhardt has, I think, possibly written a new classic of theory, which would be a classic of post-theory, so to speak. So in this sense, I think theory is alive and well, possibly, however, more contemplative about itself, more ready to reconsider its own positions, possibly one could say even more mature, less provocative, less openly radical.
And perhaps also more self-reflexive.
Perhaps more self-reflexive, I would say as well.
Perhaps could we apply the notion, the Wieckian notion of cheekly and re-cheekly, and also this image of theory dying but rising again out of its own ashes, perhaps in a different form, or...
I think we could. I think that theory is possibly now past its enfant terrible stage. It's no longer the enfant terrible kid on the academic block, so to speak. And there is no doubt that the tonalities of theory have become more considered, less provocative, more assured of their own position with the academy. For that reason, I think that theory can precisely now turn back on considering itself, renewing itself, finding resources within its own past and practice.
Ivan, I think we should definitely continue our conversation,
yes,
in our upcoming program, precisely as we had planned,
yeah,
to do. And we will be discussing as well issues which have to do with 9/11,
yes,
with post-modernity,
yes,
and so on and so forth.
Okay.
Thank you so
I
much for today, Ivan.
Gloria, wara dik l-intervista pjuttost komplessa biex najdu hekk, forsi ta' minna d-duftit biex nissimplifikaw dak li qed inti u Dr. Ivan Kallus. Gloria, semmejtu il-kelma post matul id-diskussjoni, tista' tispjegana ftit f'liema kuntest iddiskutejtu din il-kelma?
Aħna tkellimna fuq dak li jissejjaħ ir-retorika ta' endism jew terminality. U din nistgħu narawha wkoll dan il-kunċett, din in-nozzjoni, anki f'qabda kliem bħal post-theory, post-history, post-modernity, post-structuralism, imma xi tfisser eżattament din il-post? Tfisser illi it-teorija spiċċat? Issa Dr. Kallus għamel ħafna eżempji verament importanti, per eżempju ħal eżempju ta' François Lyotard illi jgħid illi disċiplina jew diskors paradossalment issir iktar attwali appuntu meta il-moviment illi minnu ħadet ħafna mill-enerġija tiegħu ikun qed imut, ikun jasal f'sitwazzjoni ta' Eżawriment. Jiġifieri jitkellem appuntu fuq din is-sitwazzjoni biex nerġa' ngħidu hekk paradossali. Imma Dr. Callus jinsisti li t-teorija ma mitiċ, assolutament, anzi kif jajtu jajt, theory is alive and well, imma qed tibda tirrikonsidra ċertu pożizzjonijiet anki fil-pożizzjoni ortodossa tagħha, jiġifieri Dr. Callus permezz ta' serje ta' eżempji bħal Lyotard, Blanchot, Foucault u Derrida tkellem appuntu fuq din ir-retorika ta' endism u terminality u ta' post ma jfissirx li t-teorija mietet.
Fil-fatt Dr. Callus ħajkun magħna għal edizzjoni oħra ta' Laboratorju Letterarju il-ġimgħa d-dieħla għalhekk aħna ma fadilna xi ħlief li nirringrazzjawkom li kontu magħna u nistednukom tagħmlu appuntament magħna għal bħalhom ġimgħa fl-istessin. Insellmilkom. Għadkom kemm smajtu.
Laboratorju Letterarju. Vjaġġ fid-dinja tal-letteratura komparata.